Bye. Okay, according to the show machine here, it is noon, so we'll get kicked off. I think we all know where we're at by now. This is the second session they renamed on me, so this one's not such a big difference from the one yesterday. I just put the little Zen on the end just because I didn't just want to call it software updates. So for those of you who don't know me, my name is Jason Sandys, as you guys can read. And I talk to customers on a daily basis. I go into customer environments and help them out. I read a lot of stuff on the forums, and that's where I see a lot of different things that I go, why in the world did you do that? But, you know, I'm not that customer, so there's all kinds of different scenarios out there. And there is really no cookie cutter for anything in Config Manager. That's potentially a weakness, right, because there's not always a clear, exact way to do things. And software updates, if you're familiar with Config Manager 2007, was very much like that. It was so open-ended that it confused people beyond belief. They've done a lot of work in 2012, and so there is a much more streamlined path to use, but it's still open-ended. So that's really a strength, because now it can get tailored to whatever your environment actually is, and you're not pushed into one single direction of actually updating your systems. So quick overview, I don't think there's anything surprising on here. A couple of things that we'll definitely talk about. User experience, right? That can kind of run the gamut for a lot of folks. So we'll get into that. And at the end of the day, right, for the most part, patching servers should be relatively easy as far as the process goes. You never know, right? Wonderful application administrators, those type of folks get in the way. But it's really when it comes to users. It's rebooting Betty Sue's desktop, and she's the CEO's secretary, i.e. the most important person in the company, right? Not a good thing to do, typically. So we'll talk about that. We'll talk about client functionality, some of the other things that come up in almost every software updates deployment. So how many of you are currently running WSUS today? I'm going to blank that one out right now. So just plain WSUS, all those people that raised their hands. Wow. Or is that a different answer? I'm sorry. Let me ask you one more time. How many of you are just running plain WSUS to patch anything in your environment? And are you reluctant to go to software updates? Anyone? There's a handful of head shakes. So hopefully I'll change your mind. I don't have the link in my deck. A fellow MVP put together a blog post, I don't know, about a year ago. I helped him a little bit. He put most of it together himself. Essentially the top 11 reasons to use software updates. CCMexec.com, you can go there and you can find that one. So hopefully that will help convince you along with the things I'm going to talk about here today. One of the other big things that I see in the issues that folks have when they come from WSUS to Config Manager, number one, they don't read the documentation. Config Manager is not a product where you can open the CD, drop the CD, you know, open the coffee bin drawer, the coffee holder, drop the CD in, and install and just be rocking and rolling. It's not going to happen. So that's the first thing. There's a lot of documentation out there. There's a lot of good documentation out there. You need to get familiar with the different concepts. The other piece is coming from WSUS or any competitive product, you have to forget about how you did things in that product. You have to take a step back. You have to actually define what your requirements are, what your SLAs are, those type of things. Figure out why you're doing software updates. I mean, conceptually, of course we're doing it. It's a good security thing to do. But let's figure out who in our company is mandating us to do software updates and what kind of SLAs we need to hit, what kind of metrics we need, what kind of reporting do we need on the back end. We have to figure all those kind of things out before we can dive into software updates. And now you can take a step back from that technical piece, kind of forget about what you were doing in that other product and implement those requirements in software updates, using your knowledge of what software updates actually does. Is that a good thing to blank that out, by the way? I don't know. It's like a new presenting technique that's kind of come up in places. Blank it out if you're talking about stuff. So I don't know. I'll take that as ambivalence as no, but okay, so I talked definitely about the top one, right? We gotta define those kind of things. Software updates is not about you, right? If it was up to us, we'd probably never patch anything, right? We really don't care at the end of the day. It's too hard. Let it go. Make sure you're testing. That's a difficult thing to say. You're never going to get people to confirm what you actually rolled out. But at least you can say, hey, I rolled it out to your test system. You didn't test it. It's your fault, right? There's just only so much that you as an administrator can actually take on. But you need to include multiple phases. Just don't go to a production phase. Have at least some verification in there that the patches are actually installing. Every now and then you get weird patches that just don't install. It happens every couple of months. The forums light up because, hey guys, I'm having an issue downloading this patch. I'm having an issue installing this patch. And if it's a critical patch, it's a good thing to head off before the fact. So make sure you have a couple of phases in there, both on the server side, both on the application side. Pick some users, pick some systems that you need to roll those out on. And of course, your business critical systems. Hopefully those guys actually have test systems that you can roll your updates out to first. Rebooting is another huge one. We see this one on the forums all the time. You know, I'm getting screamed at because my systems are rebooting when they're not supposed to. There's actually a couple of good technical reasons for that, and we'll look at that and why it should and should not happen in your environment. We'll look at that in one of the demos, too. Dependencies are always a big thing, right? Reboots have dependencies. If I reboot my domain controller that has DNS on it and DHCP, what can't come up if that domain controller is down right now, right? SQL Server, you've got three-tier applications. If I'm rebooting my SQL Server, well, not a good thing for me to reboot that middle tier that's relying on that SQL Server potentially. You know, there's a lot of applications out there that don't recover gracefully if their connections aren't there when they start up. So you got to go discover a lot of these things. This is all about going out, documenting. Yeah, there it is. It's on there. You know, at the end of the day, you know, this is a cliche in IT, but it's so true. If you get hit by a bus, or you're in Vegas, you're laying on the beach in Hawaii, wherever you're at, who's actually going to pick this up if, for whatever reason, you're not doing it? I mean, are you going to sit Tuesday night out here on the couches out here and do your software update process? Some people have to, right? Because there's no one else around that knows the process and that's competent enough to do that. And documenting processes, right? This is such an understated thing. You end up learning more about what's going on yourself because now you have to go and document it. You know, I can harp on documentation all the time, but I think everyone kind of understands the value, but until you actually get into it and do it and see it for yourself, it's one of those lost arts. And of course, automation. Use PowerShell, use Orchestrator, use whatever other tools there, right? There's lots of other great sessions on automating all of these different types of things, and there's obviously some automation within Config Manager to help you out also. Okay, enough on that slide. So we kind of got to go back a little bit to 101 a little bit, and that's going back to the definitions of what happens actually in the software update process in Config Manager. Why? Well, because like I said, most people just simply aren't reading the documentation, and most of their confusion comes from definitions and from semantics. They make assumptions based upon what a word says and what they think it should do because of that, and it usually doesn't always carry through, right? So the first one requires WSUS. This is one of my final points. Just because it requires WSUS doesn't mean it is WSUS. Doesn't mean it does anything like WSUS actually does. It uses WSUS, and that's about it, right? There's some pieces on the back end, but at the end of the day, you're never going into the WSUS console. You're not approving updates. You're not doing WSUS things, so you have to learn that right off the bat. Must be on all the top-level sites, right? So the software update point is a thin layer on top of WSUS itself. It essentially controls what WSUS does behind the scenes. It allows WSUS to work behind the scenes. But Config Manager itself, or WSUS itself, isn't really the one that's pushing the buttons on the clients. It's not the one forcing updates onto the clients. So you got to remember, it's just a thin layer. They go hand in hand, and you can't separate them once you're in software updates. And that really goes to the third bullet on there. It's about the update catalog. That's what WSUS does. It's simply downloading the update catalog from Microsoft, and making it available to the clients. So that piece is actually really unchanged as far as the clients go. But it's very key, right? It's not WSUS actually pushing the updates down to your clients themselves. And that's exactly what that last bullet. This is another kind of a myth or maybe something that a lot of people don't realize out there. It's the number two that's on there, right? The actual update catalog that WSUS downloads is only updated on a regular basis twice a month. There's always out-of-band updates. They happen, what, maybe once every 3 months or so, hopefully less, sometimes a little bit more. But twice a month, so you have Patch Tuesday, right? Everyone knows and loves Patch Tuesday. Those are all of our security updates. Those are all of our critical updates. The Microsoft says everybody should have these. There's also the fourth Tuesday of every month that the WSUS catalog actually gets updated with stability hot fixes and with other hot fixes they deem that everyone probably should have but aren't necessarily critical. So you don't really ever have anyone reflecting that or putting that into their process, but it's there. So what do we really need to do here? We need to update our catalog once a month. You see folks that are updating their catalog on a daily basis. Well, if there's an out-of-band update, that's something unusual, and you're going to have to plan for it in some unusual way anyway. So at that point, you probably need some type of manual intervention to go in with that. But you really don't need to update your software catalog, your update catalog, more than once a month. Okay, time for some pictures, and wow, that does not show up well on that screen, does that? So the top little box there is WSUS, and there's the SUP. This is exactly what I just talked about, right? So it's WSUS itself that's downloading the update catalog from Microsoft. It's downloading it, and the SUP is telling it when to do these kind of things. So WSUS isn't going off and doing it on its own. You can actually go into the WSUS console here. So, you know, I said don't go into the WSUS console for administration. It's okay to go in there and look around, see what updates are actually in there, see when it last synchronized. You can look at things, just don't play with things that are in there. It goes through the SUP, and now it gets synchronized into the Config Manager database, where all the updates become configuration items. Just like DCM configuration items, just like the new app model, all uses configuration items, and they're all stored in the database for use. A new thing in Service Pack 1, this was a kind of a big thing for most of the Defense Department here in the U.S. And for some other folks, is actually using another WSUS server as the upstream server to get the catalog from. So within the U.S. government or the U.S. military, there's an agency called DISA, and they essentially approve, and not all the details, so I'm sure someone here knows that one a little bit more than me, but they approve all the updates that are allowed to go out into the military installations. And so they do that on a WSUS server, surprise, surprise. But if you can't actually download your update catalog from that WSUS server, well, you're kind of out of luck. So that was something new they added in Service Pack 1. So if you have an upstream WSUS server, you have a parent company, a parent organization that is mandating certain updates or restricting you to certain updates, then you can actually implement that now in Service Pack 1. And, of course, the clients are actually talking directly to WSUS, right? So you'll hear the SUP and WSUS get thrown around interchangeably a lot of times, but it's very important to make that distinction. The clients themselves, when they download the update catalog, and you saw on the last slide, there's actually the EULAs also. So less and less updates that I see have EULAs to them, but the EULAs themselves are actually accessed off of WSUS. So the clients need access to WSUS itself, and that's where they're pulling the catalog. They don't go to the SUP. The clients never actually really talk to the SUP. The SUP is an infrastructure-only role. And now, of course, when you add a hierarchy in here, and everyone knows not to use a CAS, right? We've drilled that one into you so far. There's a handful of exceptions, we understand, and there's always different reasons. But in this case, really, this could be a parent site and a secondary site. So regardless, you're always going to have these type of interactions. There are going to be cases where you need this. And so in this case, it's kind of like the WSUS hierarchy on the back end. You just have two SUP servers. One's an upstream, or two WSUS instances. One's upstream, one's downstream. The catalog is going to get transferred between them, and the SUP is going to synchronize that down into the database. Not a whole lot different here. In 2012, though, you have to have that WSUS instance on the top-level site. So if you have a CAS, it has to be there. If it's a primary site and you have secondaries, it has to be on the primary site also. In general, on the secondary sites, a quick little aside there, you probably don't necessarily need a SUP on the secondary sites, though. So this kind of comes down to the hierarchy and the architecture, right? So we're talking about the WSUS catalog. The initial download of the WSUS catalog is usually around 10 meg. Kind of depends upon what you've all put in there. If you put every language possible in there, of course, that's going to be a lot bigger. If you've selected every product possible, it's going to be a lot bigger. But for a typical single language catalog selection, you're going to have about 10 meg initial download. It's coming down via bits. Bits isn't the greatest technology in the world, but Bits is actually pretty good. So those clients are going to take a one-time hit of 10 meg to get the catalog down. And from then on, it's just deltas. So if you don't have that SUP at the secondary site, they're going to do that from the primary site's WSUS server. So if you can tolerate that initial 10 meg hit, you know, one-time hit, kind of should be, if you can plan for that, then it's no big deal. And then after that, the deltas literally are usually in the hundreds of K. right? Which is typically very trivial traffic. And of course, it's coming down via bits also. It also prevents, you know, any complexity in your environment. You know, kind of going back to the CAS thing a little bit. It's not that you necessarily shouldn't use a CAS because it's technically wrong. It just adds complexity, right? The whole keep it simple, stupid philosophy. More things in your environment, more things to break, right? Less things in your environment, less things to break, less things for you to ultimately worry about. And that's exactly what removing the SUP off the secondary site is all about. Another piece that is brand new, and I think I actually have a graphic, so I'll actually skip to that. And man, hopefully you guys can read that better than I can, because I can't see it up there very well. But we have the ability to have multiple SUPs. So prior to Service Pack 1, you could actually use an NLB. And how many love NLBs? There's got to be one. Come on. Nobody? Hey, there's one right there. Thank you. So NLBs obviously have a very bad reputation, both even within Microsoft, without Microsoft. They work, you know, for exactly what they're supposed to do, which isn't a whole lot of the scenarios some folks would like to use them for. So to remove that complexity, so we've got the product group now actually removing some complexity from the environment. They said that, well, you know, NLBs have some pain points. We need to get rid of it. We need to just make it so that we put two roles out there and the clients figure out what to do from there, kind of like they do with the management points, kind of like they do with distribution points, right? Kind of like they do with the other client-facing roles. And so that's exactly what they did in Service Pack 1. They didn't get rid of the NLBs. You can actually still do an NLB if you want to do it through PowerShell. But, you know, then again, you're probably planning for a huge environment if you're doing that at that point. They're not as robust as an NLB, so once again, that kind of goes to that huge environment piece. So they don't do this automatic load balancing. There's no automatic failover. But they do a good job of having an availability solution very easily just by standing up two separate SUPs in a single primary site. So that's a good little stress point. This isn't for secondary sites, kind of going along those same lines as don't use SUPs in secondary sites in general. This is only for your primary site, and so you're going to add that availability now. Now, generally, because it is for availability, right, it's not about location. So if you've heard me talk about the boundaries, I don't think Steve mentioned it this morning, but I'll mention it tomorrow. There's no location awareness. So when a client chooses which SUP to use, it has nothing to do with where that client is, right? It's all about their site. So you can't put a SUP over in Japan and expect the Japanese clients to automatically pick that SUP. It's not going to happen. That's random, just like the MP selection is, similar to what Steve described on the MP selection this morning. But what it is for availability. I've said that a couple times. So the kind of cool thing here is you can actually use a shared database, and this is the recommended configuration. So a lot of folks didn't know you could do this, but WSUS in and of itself is kind of a cool service, but it's simple enough and that they can actually use a single instance. So you can have multiple WSUS servers using a single database to store all of their content in or to store all of their metadata in. And that cuts down on overhead. It's another server not to have in the picture. Of course, now if you only have one server, you probably want to cluster that server because it's, you know, an availability solution, so you don't want to have a single point of failure in that availability solution. You definitely can have two databases if you want, so another reason to potentially use multiple SUPs is in a cross-forest scenario, right? You pretty much couldn't do this pre-Service Pack 1 in a cross-forest scenario without jumping through a lot of hoops. So if you have two forests, that's one exception to kind of that location awareness, right? So when I talk about location, it's really geographic IP addressing. A forest isn't necessarily a physical location. But if you have a separate forest and you put a SUP over there, clients in that forest will go to that SUP, and clients in your main forest will go to the SUP in their forest. So that's another way to do it there. But if those you know, have security boundaries between them, which is typically the reason for having multiple forests, then you're probably going to have an issue with sharing a database. At that point, you'd separate the databases out. And, of course, the clients, nothing's really changed on the clients here. So the client will choose whichever one. It's kind of that random list that comes back. Once again, it's not looking at boundaries to pick us up. And the failover mechanism, this got mentioned in the quiz yesterday, but it actually tries to do a scan. If it fails the scan four times, it will actually fail over to the other SUP. So nothing, you know, spectacular going on there. It's just, can I see you? Can I see you? Can I see you? Can I see you? No, okay, I'm going to go try this guy. There's no automatic failback either. So there's really no load balancing. It's a little bit of a simplistic technique, But it works pretty well, right? In general, WSUS is pretty robust. As long as you've implemented everything on good hardware, then you should be pretty good, and you have that fallback plan. Okay, so we'll transition a little bit into the clients, and this is kind of the interaction between the actual software updates and the clients themselves. So the binaries, so we've talked really, when we're talking WSUS, right, as I mentioned at the beginning, it's all about the update catalog. It's about that metadata. What updates are available? Why should they be involved, or the criteria for installing them on each system? So in this case, we're talking about the actual binaries. And I said at the beginning, right, WSUS isn't the one that gives those out. It's not the SUP that is actually distributing those. These actually come from the distribution points. So that kind of reinforces the no SUPs at secondary sites. Another nice part about using the content distribution system within Config Manager is you've got infrastructure reduction, right? If you're actually having to use WSUS in your environment, you've probably got duplicate servers out in your environment and duplicate infrastructure. But now we're going to use Config Manager's DPs, which you've already got out there for your software distribution. And you've also got the content replication system that's actually in Config Manager also, which means we can pre-cache things. Right, we're not waiting until the deadline for updates to actually get downloaded to the clients. And there's a lot of randomization type things that are going on in 2012 also, and of course it's using bits by default. So you're going to get pretty good throughputs on all these things, and of course there's always a little bit of planning, right? If you want to get an update out today, you're going to have to wait for those things to download. You've got to wait for those things to get to the DP. You always got to account for those kind of things. But if you've planned ahead and made your deployments a week out, 2 weeks out, however long, depending upon your process that you defined initially when you're going to do these things, then the clients are actually going to have the update binaries already sitting there. And really, how long does it take to install most updates? A couple minutes at most? Even on servers, you can go for a few minutes after that. But if the binaries are down, that's always the lengthiest piece that's there. Okay, the binary flow here. So this is a little bit different in 2012 than it was in 2007. So the top path here is what it was in 2007. And really this is important around credentials. So a lot of folks say, hey, we're in a segregated environment. My site server doesn't have access to the internet. So I can't download these binaries. Well, that's not a problem because you can actually just hop over to the console to do these things. Any internet connected console is what's actually going to be downloading those binaries. So I said that backwards. It's actually the bottom path that was in 2007, right? It's wherever that console was. So if you're running that console on the site server, of course, it needs internet access. If you're running the console on your local client workstation, it's the one that needs internet access, and it's the one that's going to be downloading the binaries and then putting them into your update package source folder. And in 2012, it all goes into our wonderful content library, where they then get into the DP. Right, so each DP actually has its own content library also. So this is the content library typically on the primary site where you've defined it. And then they go to the clients. So nothing different from your normal software distribution process is really what it comes from, or what it comes down to, except the ADR path, which we'll be talking about next. So ADRs are automated deployment rules, automatic deployment rules, one of those two words. And they allow you to essentially perform all these steps without having to do it manually, automatic, just like the word says. That's always going to happen on the site server. So your site server is always going to have those permissions. So that includes proxy access, right? So if you've got a blue coat in your environment, and it's preventing your site server or wherever your console's at or whatever's running the actual download from actually getting out to Windows Update, well, you're going to have issues getting the catalog down first off, and then you're going to have issues downloading the binaries. So you've got to make sure that you have the network path available. And then you've got to make sure that you have credentials. So if you have a proxy server that requires credentials, you're going to have to go in and make sure you've entered those credentials properly in the proper place, right? Site server for the ADR or wherever the console's coming from. Typically, the console, no big deal. You're already logged onto the system. You can verify those kind of things. But on the site server itself, that's a little bit more of a challenge to do on occasion. So got to always remember where you're coming from to be able to set up those permissions. Another piece of permissions is that update package source folder. So I've got to have write permissions on wherever I've specified that source folder, right? So that's both NTFS and share permissions. I have to have not necessarily full control, but I have to have enough write permissions. And so me as the console, if I'm running the console, it's using my permissions to do that. But as an ADR, like we said, that's an automatic process that the site server itself runs. So the site server's computer account itself needs those permissions. It's again, both NTFS and share permissions on that package source folder so that you can actually, or it can actually download those binaries into that folder and then carry on with the process. Okay, so within software updates itself, kind of taking a step back again, a little bit 101, and my timer's freaking out. Going back to 101, these are kind of the three different objects that are in 2012. In 2007, I think there were like eight different explicit objects in the console, and that's where all the confusion came from. But even with just three objects here, people continue to, like I said, not read the documentation to figure out exactly what each object is. They make assumptions based upon the names. So people see update package, right? So what do we do with packages typically, right? Software packages. We deploy them because that's what we've always done in Config Manager and SMS. Well, that's not what actually happens in Config Manager itself. The packages simply contain the binaries. We just saw that on the flow. And make those binaries available to the clients. The clients pull the update they need from any available package. They don't care which package it actually is. As long as that package is available on an accessible DP, they're going to pull it out of there. They don't have to download the entire package even. They can pull out that one single update that they need from there. So lots of, you know, a little bit of a different nuance there, but it's an easy and bad assumption to make, is to think that the packages themselves are what you deploy. So what do you deploy? It's the software update groups, the first one that's listed up there. They don't really contain, right? So this is, once again, you start getting into some of these little semantic details, but semantics sometimes lead you into bad assumptions. And so I'm always very explicit about this one. They contain references. They don't actually contain the updates. The updates themselves, right, you're typically talking about the binaries. That's the package. So it's just a reference. And the software update groups are all about organization, right? So if you don't like organization, you can have a single software update group and be happy until you hit that 1,000 hard limit that they've actually put in there in Config Manager 2012. So that's something to know about. They ran into lots of performance issues in 2007. There was a soft limit or a performance recommendation of only having 500 updates in a normal update, not an update list, an update deployment in 2007. Well, lots of people ran into that. So they actually put a hard limit of 1,000 updates into a software update group. You may not hit that too quickly. If you have lots of languages, you're going to hit that real quick. If you have lots of products, you're going to hit that real quick. And as time goes on, you're going to start getting closer and closer and closer to getting to that. And of course, the deployment. The deployment is the deployment. There's really not a whole lot of bad assumptions to make, except for what it deploys. So like I said, doesn't deploy packages. It actually deploys the software update groups. And even there, you can start getting to some little semantics, because what it does is it assigns updates. So just because I assign or deploy a software update group to a client doesn't mean that client is actually going to install those updates. What's it going to do? It's actually going to scan to make sure that it needs that update, and then it's only going to install the updates that it thinks that it needs or that are applicable to it based upon the metadata that it downloaded in the update catalog. So ADRs, that's the automated process within Config Manager. Right? We're going to go ahead and create one here in a second. And it's really about making things a little bit easier for folks because you ended up having to make these other objects. We looked at those three main objects. There's actually a couple of other smaller ones that you can take advantage of, but you don't have to. But ADRs are all about creating or updating these other object types. And so that's another fallacy. We see this one all the time. My ADR is not deploying my updates. Where do I go to troubleshoot? I looked in the ADR log to figure out why my updates aren't deploying. Well, if your ADR is running fine, it has nothing to do with actually deploying the updates, right? It's not the one doing it. It's your software update group. It's your deployment. And in your package if it's potentially not populated on your DPs. So all the ADRs ultimately do is run on a specific schedule, and they automate the grunt work like the last bullet says. So let's switch over here. We'll hopefully still connected. And we are. Internet access is rocking today. Okay, so obviously in the new 2012 console, anyone not seen this yet? Anyone? Good. Really? Are you serious? I'm sorry. You've seen it now. Okay. So we have our automatic update rules, and it's really a matter of running through our nice little wizard. There's lots of little gotchas in here too, though. If you're not careful, you can miss a lot of the little things that are in here. So I'm just going to call this whatever I want, MMS test. And I will use Zoomit hopefully liberally here in a minute. We have templates. So if you remember 2007, they actually had templates in there. And what were templates? Templates were just a collection of settings that could be applied to a deployment. Well, the confusion over templates always was, well, I went and changed my template. Why didn't my deployment change? So my analogy always was, and still actually holds up, is a template's a cookie cutter, right? If I cut out my gingerbread cookie, I bake my gingerbread cookie, and I now go bend my gingerbread cookie template or my cookie cutter out of shape, it doesn't change the cookies I already baked. It's the exact same thing. A template merely copies those settings over to the deployment at the time you created the deployment. It doesn't affect anything else that's been created since or created before that. Unfortunately, there's no object in here. There's no node in the console itself for templates. You actually have to come directly into the ADR interface to manage those templates. So obviously, there's a little manage template, and we can pick. So in the Service Pack 1, they added these two built-in templates. I don't really know why they did that, but they did. This Patch Tuesday one's okay. The definition one, I think a lot of people use. The Patch Tuesday one is, I don't know, I think they were trying to jumpstart people to start doing some of these kind of things and helping them to try to use ADRs. Your own custom templates are usually much better. But if you need to delete one, this is the only place you can delete one. If you need to rename one, this is the only place you can rename one. But you can't create one here, right? So a little bit of confusion there. At the end of this wizard, it will actually give you a chance to save all the settings that you put into this ADR into a new template. So a little bit of confusion there, but if you're okay with where those are at or you know where those are at, pretty easy to work around. And at the end of the day, it's not like you're creating these all the time, so it shouldn't be too big of a deal. So this section right here, there we go, with the, and my Zoomit skills, there we go. So I said that ADRs create or update those other objects. Well, this is exactly where you tell it, hey, do I want it to create or update them? And specifically the software update group, right? Do I want to create a new one? Do I want to use that one that's always sitting there? Well, remember, these are software update groups are about organization. How do you want to actually organize your software update groups? And every person in here, you're probably going to have potentially a small little difference in how you would initially do that. And even at the end of the day, you might have a difference in how you would do that based upon your organization and based upon the updates you have out there. So there's really no one way to actually organize your software update groups. The one thing you always have to keep in mind was that 1,000 hard limit of actually the updates that are in your update group. So you got to keep that in mind when you're building these. Am I going to get to that limit anytime soon? Am I going to have to rebuild this ADR every few months so that it creates a new update group? So generally, in my opinion, I always choose create new. That can become painful for certain things like endpoint protection definitions. You don't want to have 1,000 different endpoint protection software update groups in there because now your console's too convoluted. So you have to make sure you're thinking about which updates you're going to put in the software update group when you choose which of these options to actually have. The last option on here, my nice straight line, is the enable the deployment. So this is key because what it's actually going to do is it's going to create a deployment on that software update group it creates or updates. Now, if it just updated a software update group, it'll actually update the deployment also, which is a good thing. You want the times to shift on that deployment. Remember, the deployments define the times of when the updates are actually going to go out. Now, the one kind of funky thing here, though, is an ADR can only create a mandatory deployment or a required deployment is the new terminology in 2012. It can't create an available deployment in 2012. So if you're using an ADR for some application servers that you want to let the application administrators actually install the updates on, well, this is the only route you can actually take today. You can't create that available deployment, but you can have it create a disabled required deployment, and this is the way you would actually do that. And you know, this little checkbox, I've missed it so many times going through the wizard because it's kind of buried at the bottom, so you have to just make sure you know it's there, and of course, gone through this a few times to see that. And see if I can get up to my next button there. The wizard is a bit too big. Where's the UI group? Wow, I'm going to have to like try to tab down to it. No. Oh, I got to select the collection first. So, of course, we're targeting whatever collection we have. I don't have any collections built out in my lab. But that's always another consideration, right? Which systems are we actually going to target with the updates we're choosing to put in this software update group that's collected? So in this case, just in case, I'll choose all my mobile devices. Okay, let's see if I can tab down to it. That's kind of funny. The taskbar? I'll drag it off to the side. There you go. That works. Okay, so a couple of other pieces in here. Use the Wake on LAN. Anybody using Wake on LAN? Do y'all know about the new proxy Wake on LAN in 2012 SP1? Did anyone talk about it this week? It's good stuff. Okay, good. So if you've thought about using Wake on LAN in the past and didn't like it because Wake on LAN itself kind of sucks, that's not Microsoft's fault, right? They didn't design Wake on LAN. This is a much better way. It's essentially a peer-to-peer Wake on LAN. So, not a whole lot else on here, but EULAs, once again, you can kind of see the EULAs that I talked about bubbling up here. If you don't allow them to be automatically agreed to, I have no idea why you wouldn't want to, but obviously someone in marketing or somewhere thinks EULAs are important, or legal, or one of those type of folks. So now we go into selecting the criteria that we want. So you can select whatever criteria you want in here. So we can do product, we can have any of the different things that we need to put into the software update group. Now one kind of disconnect here is if you remember the console here, if you've ever searched for updates in the console, and I actually can go up here. Well, that's my update group that I have there. I'll go to all software updates. But I can hit the add criteria, and I've got this rich set of different criteria that I can combine in lots of different ways. Unfortunately, we can't always duplicate that exactly in the automated deployment rule. So that's one of the things that hopefully they're working on. We've given them lots of feedback on that one. So you essentially have two different filter criteria for searching for updates manually as you do in the ADR. A little bit of a disconnect, but as long as you know that's there and you're planning correctly, you're good to go. Another one that I see a lot of folks using is this required. And it kind of baffles me to a certain extent. Because they'll put things in like required, or actually you can put different numbers in here so that it's required greater than one. So that you're only setting your ADRs to download updates and to put updates into update groups that are actually required in your environment. To me, that's a false assumption. You're actually making an assumption because, right, software updates are about being preemptive, about putting them out there so they get installed whenever a client needs them. Well, you don't always know when a client needs them, and there's lots of scenarios when you don't know what the clients actually need. So operating system deployment is one of them, right? So you may do the required equals one or greater than one. And of course, all your current systems, you're going to look at all what your current systems have. But now if all of a sudden I'm deploying a new operating system and it needs an update that hasn't been previously put out there before, or it's an older update, now required equals one or greater than one is going to fall through and you're not going to have that update available for you. So in my opinion, that's a very short-sighted method, and I've actually seen specific scenarios, if you put a time frame on this now, too. Right? So if I say I only want to look at, and there's a release date in here, date released. If I want to look at, last month, wherever last month is, and I also say the required is greater than one, now what happens if all of a sudden somebody uninstalls an update, right? Or I do that OSD, my operating system deployment, and I deploy a new system, and the core image for that system was 3 months old, but it's a new update, right? So now all of a sudden, that new image that's coming out isn't going to be patched, and I'm not even going to have the update available for that thing to be patched. So there's a handful of other little core scenarios or fringe scenarios where that's a very short-sighted decision to make, in my opinion. Okay, we'll leave it for this ADR, just to press on. Oh, I didn't like that one, did it? Oh, date released. Go away. This is a nice little one, and I honestly don't know if this was a Service Pack 1 edition or if it was in there in 2012. I don't remember explicitly. But that middle option that's selected by default. One of the other problems that comes up with software updates is actually scheduling things around Patch Tuesday, right? If you set a maintenance window, if you set a deadline, you set any of those things, It's great. You go into the schedule builder and you say, I want to do things on the second Wednesday of the month. Well, guess what? About half the months, the second Wednesday comes before the second Tuesday, right? So now all of a sudden your ADR ran, but your catalog hadn't updated and you're all out of whack here. So this is one good solution for at least that initial problem of getting the catalog down. Is anytime that you have a software update synchronization, so you schedule that one. Typically, you're going to do that one every Tuesday. So remember I said you only need it once a month? Just go ahead and do it every Tuesday or every second Tuesday. Schedule it that way, and then this will run all of those times right after that finishes, so you're not ever having to come in here manually, check on it. It's always a good thing to check and make sure automated processes ran, but you're never having to go in here manually initiate those things. Okay, quick, like I said before, right, there's no way to set an available deployment. Notice my time down here, my installation deadline at the bottom. It's as soon as possible or a specific time. There's no deadline in here, right? You actually have to pick that time. So once again, just set it to disabled if you really want an available deployment. Of course, you're going to have to go back and manually create that available deployment, or you're going to have to use PowerShell to create it for you, which is the preferred choice, of course. But either way is perfectly valid technically. Watch out for the client local time. Do you really want all of your systems globally, all 100,000 systems globally patching at the exact same time? That would cause me to cringe. So make sure that you actually select client local time. In 2007, UTC was actually the default. We could never figure that one out, so they've actually changed that now. It's definitely not alphabetically first. We'll talk about user experience in a little bit, too. Do you want to show your users what's going on, or you just want to ram it down their throats? So you can kind of see where I stand on that issue. I think definitely users being involved in the process helps everything out. Gets your compliance up. It allows the updates to be scheduled around them. Servers, that's a little bit of a different story, obviously, because you can do lots of different things potentially there. But on the user side, getting them involved, making them at least feel like they're empowered, right? We don't ever really want to empower users. But making them feel like they're involved in the process and working around their schedule is definitely a good thing. Our console alerts, our download settings. So I'm not going to talk about these specifically. Go back, if you weren't here for Steve's session on boundaries and how boundaries work with these kind of things, he talked about this a little bit. So that's a good session to go review. And, of course, our package at the end of the day, right? We got to put our update binary somewhere. When this ADR runs, it creates that package. Or it's going to use an existing package, and it's going to put those updates actually in there. So, unfortunately, the real rub, and I don't think I have a package. Yeah, I do. So we'll carry on. And I'll show you this in a second, where I'm going to download from. You can download things manually. It's a rough path to go down. Our languages, and I'll finish this up. So the thought I was going to finish there about the package is once this ADR is actually created, and we'll go back over here to this node where it was created at, I can't change the package. Good thing, bad thing. Well, in my opinion, it's a bad thing. So if I am using just this one ADR to do my software updates every month, now my one package is getting bloated. It's getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And now they decide to put a new DP in. Now I have this 4 gig package, right? Software updates get big pretty quick that I have to update or I have to send to this new distribution point. Yeah, not a fun thing to do because it's going to stall out everything else in the pipeline as far as content distribution goes. And of course, my networking guys aren't going to be happy with me because I'm using their pipe for 2 weeks in a row. And I've seen those kind of things happen before. So the only answer here is PowerShell. So I mentioned that a few times. I think I've mentioned that in most of my sessions. Hopefully that one's going to get fixed. That's definitely feedback that we've given to them. But in the meantime, a lot of these little annoyances, you can always work around with PowerShell. Okay, so that's ADRs. Let's see if I made sure I got everything on there. Package, criteria, deployments, one deployment, yep, we're all good. And the bottom one on there, like I said, is an annoyance. I see people ask those questions, and it leads people down the wrong path of troubleshooting and of what's actually going on behind the scenes. So there's different ways to ultimately schedule. So, you know, I kind of skipped past that a little bit, or I talked about the deadline a little bit where you can't have an available deployment. But you can do different things. You can create that available deployment after the fact, like I said, manually, without a deadline. So what is the expectation there? The expectation is for the user to initiate the update. You know, that's probably valid on your application servers where you have application administrators who don't want to install things. Probably not valid on most of your client population. You really want those to be locked down. But like I said, it's for those tight systems or those systems where change control is really a big issue. We can do the required deadline. This is the one that most of the time folks are going to be using that. Your normal users, there's no reason for them to have final say over what updates do and do not get installed. It's the way to open up your environment to vulnerabilities. And then there's kind of a last way, not really a hybrid way, but a little bit of a different way of approaching it, and that's actually to use maintenance windows. So if you're going to do this on your server side, maybe on your client side, there's kind of a problem with using maintenance windows on the client side, though. If I only want my updates to install after hours, what happens if my users are turning their systems off? Or they're putting their laptops in their bag and taking them home, and they don't have access to the DPs to download the content during those maintenance windows, right? So you've potentially got an issue you've got to make sure you work out so that those maintenance windows are actually available while that system is on and can download those updates. Hopefully you've pre-cached those updates, so maybe that user pops open that laptop at home and it's going to install during that time, but you can't necessarily count on that. And maybe that's a bad thing, right? If they're sitting in a hotel room trying to get work done, you don't necessarily want the updates to be installing and sucking away their cycles. So usually maintenance windows are best used with servers, because servers are typically always on, and those maintenance windows are going to be valid for them. So you got to always think about that. And you can also use the business hours. Kim and I will be talking about business hours a little bit more tomorrow, so I won't go too much into that one. So kind of the two different ways to do it. Different colors. I think they messed up my colors. I'll blame it on them. If we're using no maintenance windows, you can actually use just a single set of collections. Right, so one of the things, of course, they did in 2012 is they got rid of the collection hierarchies. We can't have a top-level collection with sub-collections. There's a lot of implications, and this is one of them. So what you end up having to do at that point, you can use one software update group. Right. So if they have different needs, different times, right? Remember what the deployment actually defines. It defines, really it comes down to the deadline time, but sometimes suppressing the reboots. And there's a handful of other options that are in there in the deployments that may be different. And so those may be things or ways to stagger out those deployments or use the reboots, not use the reboots, maybe turn on that user interactivity, not have that user interactivity on. But you can use that same software update group. You just end up creating multiple deployments using PowerShell. But you know, whatever way you actually want to get it done, it's not too big of a deal to do. Another way to do that is if you're going to be using maintenance windows. We can have a limited collection or a collection that other collections are limited to. So it's very similar to our child-parent concept that we have in 2007. We create our sub-collections, those ones on the far right over there, and they're all limited to a master collection. Of course, the master collection has to have all the systems in it, and we deploy to that master collection. But now the maintenance windows, there are different maintenance windows on each of those limited collections, set things up to be cascaded in different time frames. So for clusters, this might be a good thing. For your domain controllers, right? You don't want to reboot all your domain controllers at the same time. So now these groups can actually be phases. Or maybe you have a pilot phase and a test phase and a dev phase and then finally your production phase. And so there's lots of different ways so that you can now set this up so it cascades down. And of course, you don't have to limit yourself, right? You can use a hybrid approach, right? There's no reason that you have to go one way or the other way specifically. So some general guidelines. Once again, like I kind of said a little while back, everyone's going to have a little bit of a different way to do this because of their organization. You know, you've got lots of different clients, you've got different applications. There are no two IT organizations that are exactly the same. And so everyone's going to have their own unique needs on this one. Software update groups, though, in general, I like to have one per month. I want to have that so I can check compliance. My reports are typically going to run against a software update group. So I want to go and make sure that I can narrow my specific report down to that one software update group. There's even a concept called compliance groups. It's not really a I don't know if it's officially in the documentation or not, but it's an informal concept that the developers use. And it's essentially you put the updates into an update group. Once again, right, if you don't deploy that update group, it's just organizational, kind of like an update list was. But now I can report against that update group. So if I want to have a yearly update group that I didn't actually deploy, but I want to have a report run against, great, you can do that. There's no reason you have to create that deployment on the software update group. And at that point, it's called a compliance group, because now I can check my compliance against all the updates that are actually in that group. Update packages, a little bit same type of thing, a little bit bigger interval, though. Do I want it to grow to 4 gigs? No, definitely not. But at the same time, do I need one every month? Probably not. You can do it, but there's definitely no reason to do it. There's honestly no technical reason or any way to divide your update packages up. Just pick a way that divides them up so that you don't have this one big monolithic 4-gig package that you actually have to push out there. And of course, your collections. You know, I showed you kind of two different strategies. There's hybrid strategies in there. There's ways you can combine those strategies. You know, pick it, set it up, make sure that you're kind of separating things out into different phases, into different classes. You know, once again, your application administrators, your Citrix administrators, right? Because maybe it's not just the Citrix administrators, it's the Citrix users that you're going to be impacting. So you want to put those into their own collection, right? There's no way to say all the servers in this collection, except this one, gets this patch, right? It doesn't work that way. So you have to make sure that if you're going to have those exceptions or those special systems, you put them into their special collection up front. And you know, that, once again, that kind of goes back all the way to the beginning. Define your requirements. Make sure you know what all those systems are, what they're all doing. Make sure you know what their dependencies are, who's using them, what their business hours and SLAs are, so that you can actually organize your collections. Not really like Active Directory as far as how you organize it, but some of the same type of questions that you need to ask. Making sure that you're structuring it for how you're going to administer things. Don't just set it up on a political basis. Make sure you know how the updates are actually going to get deployed. And the other one on the far right is a pet peeve of mine, too. I think I have a lot of them, but there's no relationship, and I definitely called this one out before, right? There's no relationship between the software update group and the update package, right? I've said that. So don't, you know, even though the wizard kind of hides that, it definitely hit it in 2007. It was very easy to draw that conclusion in 2007, but it's not a true statement, right? Whatever update the package is in, great. Client's going to pull it from any package that it needs to get it from. Okay, so kind of the final trip is what happens on the client for all of these things. So we have another component involved. It's the Windows Update Agent. It's the one that actually downloads the update catalog from WSUS. The Windows Update Agent has been part of Windows since Windows Server, or Windows 2000 Service Pack 4, I believe, maybe 3. It's been a while. It's the one that actually downloads the catalog. It's the one that actually does our scans. It's the one that actually does our installs, right? So anytime you actually have issues with installing updates, most likely everyone else is having the same issues, whether they're using Config Manager or not. But what this also means is you're going to get consistency of scans. So whether I go to Windows Update manually, whether I initiate it from a standalone WSUS server, or I initiate it from Config Manager, I'm going to get the exact same scan results across the board because they're all using the exact same catalog, right, the WSUS catalog, and they're all using the exact same agent technology, which is the Windows Update Agent. Now, that middle one that has the call-out sub-bullets, it's kind of important. So when do these scans actually happen? Right, we download our catalog. There's different times when it downloads the catalog. There's some nice, really complicated charts of actually when that happens. But that's really important to know that there's lots of scans going on. So we have our client agent task, right? Our software update, I don't even remember what it's called. We'll look at it in a second. That one is great, but that one's mainly just about reporting compliance numbers back to Config Manager and our required numbers and things like that. The agent itself will kick off these scans. The Config Manager agent will tell the Windows Update agent to kick off these scans at many, many other times. So, right, when I get a new update deployment, how do I know that that's still applicable? How do I know that a user didn't install that? Well, I got to kick off a scan. So I'm going to go ahead and download that update. Now I'm going to kick off a scan again before I install it. I'm going to kick off a scan after I install it to make sure it installed properly. And if a reboot's required, I'm going to kick off another one after that to make sure, once again, that it installed properly. So scanning is not just a one-time thing. It's just not that schedule that you set up in Config Manager. It's going to happen over and over and over again to make sure that we still need the patch and that we actually installed the patch afterwards. That last point, and I'll get into this one a little bit more. The WUA is a double-edged sword. It was designed to be a standalone component, so it likes to do things on its own also. So we'll look at that one. Kind of what I just talked about, kind of a summation of kind of that whole piece that we talked about, right? So we got the update catalog coming down from this, from WSUS, really, right? Goes to the client via the Windows Update Agent. The Config Manager agent itself tells the Windows Update Agent, hey, go do a compliance scan. Like I said, it happens at various times. Client does the compliance scan. Compliance scan results are stored in WMI and, of course, sent back up through RMP back into Config Manager, just like all the rest of our data. And then the Config Manager agent itself downloads the binaries. So you've got a lot more interaction here than most people will think is actually there. It's not just WSUS, right? Kind of going back, digging under the covers. It's not that simplistic. So you have to, of course, plan for the ports that are happening here. You have to plan for all this traffic. And, of course, things aren't always instantaneous. Now, the one thing I have it in parentheses there, the compliance data itself goes back via state messages. So if you want to know tons of in-depth details about state messages, Steve Rahe, once again, has a fabulous blog on this. The thing to know about state messages, though, by default, they only get sent back up every 15 minutes to the server. 15 minutes is not real time, but it's pretty good. But if you need to force state messages for some reason, there's no way to do it. The only thing you can do is restart the agent. So if you're testing this process, you want to see things happen, all you can do is restart the agent, which isn't a bad thing, it's just kind of an annoyance. Group policy, that comes into play here also, because typically when configuring WSUS and the Windows Update Agent, we're doing that all through group policy. Good stuff, group policy, everybody loves group policy in general. But like I said, the Windows Update Agent likes to go off and do its own thing. So we have to make sure that we're accounting for certain things. Now, one of the things the Config Manager agent itself does is it sets some local group policies. There's just a couple of them. And it makes sure that those group policies are in place so that now our agent knows which WSUS server to scan off of. Right? That's a group policy setting. Well, if I have a domain group policy, which one wins? Obviously, the domain group policy does. And you'll see this clearly in wuahandler.log. One of the common log files that's there on the client itself. If you're having issues with software updates on a client, that's the first log to always check. Why? Because it's going to clearly say, and it literally clearly says, my policy has been overwritten by a domain policy or a higher authority or something real explicit like that. It's very explicit in there exactly what's going on, and so you're going to know that's going to go on. That's not to say you can't use a group policy. As long as that specific group policy matches up with what the local group policy is, you're good. But there's a lot of other WUA policies that are in there also. Essentially, they're all useless, so we'll look at those. But another bad thing that happens with the WUA, like I said, it goes off and does its own things, is it'll either do a reboot on you. This one comes up quite often because it also checks to see if there's pending reboots on a system, and it'll just go off and reboot at 3 a.m. If you have reboots happening at 3 a.m., it's not Config Manager. It's the WUA doing it, and you need to go look at your group policies. And, of course, it will throw up a prompt to your users. And what do users like to do when they see prompts they don't expect? Call the help desk, right? So, and we don't like that because then the help desk manager comes down and yells at us, and then we slam the door in his face, and, yeah, you know, it escalates from there. Okay, so we'll look at a few quick demos here describing some of those things. Where do we want to start? So we will first start on the client itself, as connectivity on the client is gone. So we will go over to the domain controller, and hopefully that will reestablish while we're there. And we'll look at those group policies. So most people may or may not know where these are all at. So computer, policies, admin, Windows components, and all the way at the bottom is Windows Update. So we have all of these different updates, or all of these different policies that are possible. These all ultimately control the Windows Update agent. Now, I have one enabled already. This one has to do with SCUP. So if you're familiar with SCUP, SCUP needs a certificate to sign its updates, and if you don't allow this to happen, then none of your third-party updates can happen. So that's generally a good one to put. So the other one to look at, or actually the other two to look at, are the Specify Internet Microsoft Update Service Location. I think I read that right. This is the local group policy that Config Manager actually sets. So like I said, it's okay for you to set this one as long as you set it to exactly what the client expects it to be. If you set it to anything else, the client's going to say, it's different, I'm stopping. And that being the config manager client, right, it's not going to do anything. It's not going to get involved in the process. It's just going to let the WUA do what it normally does. Now, the other one that can come into play here is the configure automatic updates. And this one, it says disabled. So we typically call this one, we're disabling the Windows Update Agent itself. It doesn't actually turn the Windows Update Agent off, right? There's still a service that's running. The Windows Update is still available via the API to call. And we can, it'll still go off and respond to Config Manager calling the scans, calling the install software updates, and those type of activities. So setting it to disabled isn't actually turning it off, but it is telling it, don't do your normal stuff. That's a good thing? Usually. It's a bad thing as of late because the WSUS team decided to do something very interesting. And the one thing the WSUS team decided to do was not make new versions of the Windows Update Agent available anywhere but via WSUS. So what happens is when they make a new WUA agent available, you put this hotfix on WSUS, there's a new WUA agent available. The only way to get that WUA agent updated on all of your clients is for them to go through WSUS. And there's a self-update process that happens. It happens regardless of any of the other settings in here except for this one. If you set this one to disabled, now self-update will never happen. And now I've got down-level WUA agents, especially if you have older XP machines in your environment, even Windows Vista machines, even, you know, non-Service Pack 1 Windows 7 machines in your environment, which of course aren't supported, but we probably have, they've got a down-level WUA agent. And that's one of the number one causes for scan failures, for update install failures, is having down-level WUA agents. So you're kind of in a rock and a hard place here. So we'll talk about how to get around that one. I'll leave that one at not configured. Or to hopefully get around that one. As my connection went away. There we go. The cloud. It's all about the cloud. So I'm going to go ahead and resume this client here. There we go. So I have a handful of updates that are actually queued up here. And the other kind of interesting thing, this is new for Service Pack 1, we have our check boxes on the side. This is a highly requested feature so that I can actually multi-select now in the software catalog here, or the software center here. So I'm going to go ahead and select this update here. Of course, that's really confusing at this point because my log parser is highlighted. I've checked another update, and I'm going to hit install selected. So which is it going to do? It's going to do the checked one, but if you're not watching closely and you didn't realize what you're doing, you may end up doing something you didn't think you were actually doing. So it's going to go off and install that update. There we go. Did I click it? Software update's having fun right now. Where did it go? I just resumed this guy, so he's probably not having fun. Oh, there it goes. Software Center was just lagging behind him. So he's going to go ahead and install those updates. Now what I'm going to do is I'm going to open Windows Update Log here. So Windows Update Log is actually the WUA log, right? It's the Windows Update Agent log. It's not a Config Manager specific log, but because WUA is actually doing all of our grunt work, it's still a good log to reference when things are and are not happening. Okay, so he's going ahead and waiting to install there. And one of the other things we will do in the meantime, because he always takes like a minute to get past the waiting install, is we'll look at another group policy that will help us out, and we'll talk about some of the implications of group policy some more. So if I actually set this to disabled, and we'll do that in a second, the users won't get a pop-up that says, hey, you need to reboot, right? Remember I said the WUA is actually checking for reboots being available, and I'll show that one to you in a second. That's, once again, confusing to the users, but we won't get the self-update. So is there potentially a hybrid solution in there? There actually is. This isn't one that's been publicized real well. But if you go under, and I went the wrong way, you go under user settings. There's actually a user setting in group policy for Windows Update. So kind of similar place, policies, admin, Windows components, Windows Update, real similar place. We have this bottom one here. Remove access, and no zoom it on here. I thought I had it. Sorry. This is the last one there. Remove access to all of the Windows Update features, right? So that's going to be on a per-user basis. So what does that mean? The user won't get that reboot pop-up. However, because the Windows Update agent itself is running as local system, we're not going to have an issue because the local system is still going to have access. This has some other ramifications, too. It's going to take away the links. It's going to make sure that the user can't go individually to Windows Update. Is that a good thing or a bad thing? It's ultimately for your organization to decide, but it's something that a lot of organizations don't want their users to actually be able to do. And so that's generally a good thing and something that people want to do anyway. And it allows the Windows Update agent itself to update itself. So we'll go back over here, and there we go. So my update finally installed. You can see the message, and here I actually have Zoom it. So let me make sure I use it. That's that middle update right there. I will restart. Now notice that's my deadline time. Actually, I didn't show it to you, but I had a software update deployment that was there. That's my deadline time. All right, so even though me as a user, I installed these ahead of time. So this is a great thing ultimately. Like I said, kind of making your users feel in the loop. They installed the update. They went to lunch, right? They knew they had updates available, so they went to lunch and they kicked them off. They went home for the night. They kicked them off. They went and had a long meeting. They kicked them off, right? You're working around the user's schedule. You can also have business hours involved here too. Once again, something we'll talk about tomorrow a little bit. But the business hours will allow the user to say, hey, that's great. Go ahead and do that later today, right? So I can do those kind of things outside of my business hours. And now my compliance is going to go up because I'm not always depending on that machine being online at the deadline time itself. But the other implication here is that my reboot won't actually happen until the deadline time, exactly like it says there. Right, so even though me as a user, I wanted to install it, maybe I didn't want to reboot right now. And so I'm not going to force that reboot until the deadline time itself. Now, notice at this point, I don't have a WU agent pop up, but what we'll do is we'll restart the WUA server or service, net stop, and we'll force the WUA to do what it normally does, and this would, like I said before, extra U in there. This is normally what happens at 3 a.m., right? This is that, hey, my machine rebooted at 3 a.m., my machine did this at 3 a.m. Well, that's the default time for the Windows Update agent to wake up and do its activity. I'm sure we've all seen that on our home systems. And I'm going to do a detect now. It will actually do this within about a minute, but I don't want to wait a minute. And so I open up Windows Update log there, and you can see it kind of scrolling through. Now, one of the things, and you can see it right there. I think it's going to freeze. There's a self-update thing that's there. You can see that going on right here. Right, it's checking for the self-update right now. It's actually checking to make sure that there's not another WUA available to it. So exactly like I said was going to happen. Now, here's the confusing part, of course. Right, I've got my WUA pop-up down here. And it's not in my face right now, but as we all know, we've seen this on our home systems, it's going to pop up. And the users are now going to have this reboot prompt, and they're going to have this reboot prompt. That's not, let's see here. Open the restart window. So what is that going to do? User confusion equals what? Help desk call, which a lot of organizations have quantified to being $10, you know, $50, $100, depending upon how they're actually doing things. That's not a good thing, typically. And then, you know, then the whole help desk manager thing happens. And so there's my restart window. Of course, I can do it on, you know, my leisure also. But that's not necessarily, like I said, the best thing to do. Go ahead and postpone that because I don't want to do that right now. So what can I do? That's the wrong system. If I come into, I read my titles, and I actually go down to, well, I'll do this one here because I'm running a little bit short on time. If I would have just set the disabled, everything would have happened exactly the same. The user just wouldn't have got that message. But that self-update wouldn't have happened, right? So I would have never had the chance to do the WUA self-update. And so they do release new ones. They haven't done it often, but they do release new ones. And so that would have never happened in my organization. So I'm going to go ahead and set the enable here. Do not show any notifications. go back to the client, run my GP update because it was a group policy change, and then we'll restart the service again and we'll do our detect now again, and you'll see there won't be a pop-up. Now there will be one little interesting quirk. Self-update won't have happened. Why won't self-update happen? Because I'm running this as a user. It's going to be not there by policy. Your policy is going to say, don't do this. We'll go back and do our stop. It's a good thing my demo machine starts and stops these quickly. And then I'm going to do my detect now. Exact same thing ultimately happens, but if I do a search for self-update, and the timestamps are a little bit close, so we're not going to actually see it. You can see it still scrolling there in the background. It's almost done doing its check. This self-update timestamp was from about 3 minutes ago, right? So that was when I ran it before, when I didn't have that policy in place. So self-update didn't actually happen. But if I go in and, in the interest of time, I won't do it explicitly, if I launch PSExec, anyone not know the PSExec trick to launch something as system? Is that serious? Are you guys, you don't know it? Okay, well, I'll show it then. PSExec dash s launches something as system, and now I'm actually running something as essentially the god account on my on the system. Very easy to do. Of course, I have to have privileges first, right? This isn't a backdoor. This isn't a hack. I had to have actually privileges to launch something as system first off. But if I go ahead and do a WUACLT detect now, and we go back to our Windows update log, and I usually, yep, there we go. And I'll zoom in on that. There's my self-update, right? Because it's actually the Windows update agent at that point that's doing it. So good thing we get our Windows update agent updated. Bad thing is, of course, that's coming from my WSUS infrastructure, which isn't distributed because I'm not planning on distributing updates from my WSUS infrastructure. So there's no good answer. There's really not much I can say here on this one except for plan for it. It's going to happen. It's not that big. It is going to come down via bits. You can see it's actually checking these cab files. Scroll over a little bit, and you can see these cab files. That self-update ActiveX AMD, that's a cab file that's actually sitting on your WSUS server. It's downloading a bunch of these cab files, it's extracting them, it's installing stuff. So not a huge deal if you plan for it, but I don't know, the rub is I have a first-class software distribution system sitting here, and I want WSUS distributing something for me? Not a good answer. There's no choice at this point in time, so you end up having to have some type of hybrid methodology here and account for it. It's not something that happens daily on a daily basis. I think they've updated the WU agent maybe a total of 10 times since it came out. Nothing huge, but it is going to happen, and it is something, especially if you go to Service Pack 1, that you're going to have to account for, because Service Pack 1 requires a hotfix for WSUS, and of course now you're going to have to roll that new WU agent out that was applicable to that hotfix. Okay. Final slide in the last minute and 47 seconds. We talked a lot about group policy. Updating the UWA, talked about that. There is a KB article out there that explicitly says we don't make a separate executable available. Let them eat cake. Okay, let me put that one back up here. I think there's actually one or two more slides, but I talked about this one a lot, right? Get your users involved. It increases your compliance big time because you're not having to make sure that those systems are actually on or available at the time you put your deadlines in. Increases user satisfaction. They actually think they have a say in what's going on, and to a certain extent they do, which makes everyone happy. I don't know who put that transition in there. So this is the final main slide. Some of the things I talked about. Review your ADR. You put those filter criteria in there. Don't just assume that it didn't grab Internet Explorer 10, right? That just came out. And if you don't want Internet Explorer 10 in your environment, you're going to get a knock on the door real quick. Plan, document, communicate. Let everyone know what you're doing, when updates are going to go out. Make sure that, you know, the bosses know, the grunts know. Everyone needs to know because somebody could be affected. So the downside to that is now everything's going to get blamed on you, right? Oh, you guys pushed out updates. You broke my stuff. Oh, yeah, we actually postponed that. Your stuff's just crap, and it broke by itself. Don't use the WSUS admin console. You know, don't treat software updates or as WSUS, and don't use the required unless you actually have a real specific scenario, maybe for endpoint protection updates, where that's actually applicable. Updates will fall through. ADRs aren't necessarily a complete solution. PowerShell, I think you've heard automation, cloud, orchestrator, those kind of things all week. It's a great way to get into PowerShell to learn some of these things. There's lots of scripts available. They are making it somewhat better to hopefully make ADRs a complete standalone solution, though. So it's going to get better, and it's gotten a lot better since 2007 based upon everyone else's feedback. So one of the ways to get feedback, tell me, go out on Connect, make sure you find a product group member if you know who they are. Let them know. They honestly really, really want to know. And make sure you plan and be realistic about things. So that's software updates. I'm 35 seconds over. Thanks.